Ken.
Yes.
Why are you in a wind tunnel?
Oh, that's the... That's probably... Is that better?
What did you do, take it out of your butt?
No.
Oh, I can hear you now.
I had a fan on me because it's hot as fuck in here.
Suffer. Don't you have, like, air conditioning?
It's having issues, and we're getting it fixed in the morning.
Ah. Fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
My entire week has been...
Well, if you could have the fan on you in some way where the microphone's not picking it up as, you know...
Let's find
thunderous
out.
Thunderous roaring. I'm fine with that, but otherwise...
Yeah, I know, it's,
You're gonna have to die of heat stroke.
Yeah, apparently.
Podcasts, The Final Frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
With XV.
That's really the moral of this episode. You can't take Jell-O and blow up a starship.
Hey, Mickey.
All I've ever cared about giving quality casting pod things.
Ken. And Fort Max.
But.
What?
But.
So, this week on that one episode, it's time for Voyager again.
Just
hooray!
Not yet that one episode.
Oh, but that reminds me, Mickey. Talk to your volunteer and have him pick out an Enterprise episode to do next week.
Will do.
Because
we are in desperate need of Enterprise help.
Because nobody can be asked.
Well, because only XV is familiar with it and likes it.
Right.
Yeah.
The rest of us
don't
know what the hell's going on, and we don't like it.
Yes, basically.
I mean, I guess we could just, like, jump into Broken Bow so you can get to the start of it.
I've watched that, and that didn't really help.
You can watch it again. It's only 2 hours.
I watched it, like, a week before we did the other episode.
You can watch it again. It's only 2 hours.
No, I'm good.
Meanwhile, Fort Max will watch an episode of, like, Stargate or something instead.
Stargate Voyager.
Let's review SG-1 instead.
Well, I guess Stargate Atlantis would almost be Stargate Voyager. Or maybe Universe, I don't know. Both involve being far from home.
Would Enterprise be Universe since it got canceled early?
Damn it, sci-fi. The thing, too, is, like, Stargate Universe was actually getting good at the point where it ended. Like, if sci-fi had given it another season, they would have had a really strong show again. And then canceled it, probably.
They should just move the show to the hub.
Then it doesn't matter if it gets canceled or not. Because the same number of people will see it. Anyway, so for this one episode of Voyager, which is not that one episode of Voyager, it's, Pathfinder?
Yes.
Pathfinder.
Season 6, episode 10.
The episode of Voyager that's not really an episode of Voyager at all. Except for about, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah. Basically, it's like a sub-episode of Next Generation.
It's basically, we cheated and didn't pick a Voyager episode.
It's basically like the production staff cheated and didn't actually film a Voyager episode.
You know, I have no problem with any of these things we've just said.
And I was surprised. I started watching it. I'm like,
you emailed me and said,
"Yeah." I was like, "Yeah." I came back. I came back like 5 minutes later. I'm like, "This is holy."
You
hell,
came
this is
back.
Terrible. Well, I came back to the email. I was like,
"Oh, I thought you like turned the episode on, and just walked away because it's Voyager."
Well, you know, same results.
It's not an incorrect approach.
No.
Not
no,
you're
no,
gonna
no,
miss
no,
anything no, important.
No. Yeah, my response was, "Wait a damn minute! This episode isn't terrible. It's actually good."
Yeah, pretty much.
All Barkley episodes are good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took me
because he's a rare breed of character in Star Trek universe. He's a human being with flaws.
Yeah, I mean, in
serious awkward, flaws.
The awkward fuck up who can't fit in anywhere.
He's flaws. He is flaws.
It did take me a minute to recall him because I hadn't seen any of his episodes in a long time. And I didn't look at the summary or anything before I started. And then I was like, oh, wait. Man, he's gone downhill.
Yeah, he's in a Voyager episode.
I know, but it's like, you know, first, you know, you help save the universe from the Borg and all of time itself, and then you're stuck in under the thumb of middle management. I can relate to that. I think all of us can, actually.
I remember when I saved the universe from the Borg.
Mm.
Well, I just meant more to like stuck in the thumb of middle management, but you know, no matter what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ken.
Yes, sure.
I think it's your turn.
Yeah,
especially since you enjoyed the episode.
It would be at this point.
Well, okay, so consider this. Like, when we did Voyager the last time, you were mysteriously unable to speak to us. Mysteriously.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because I had a sore throat.
Not at all suspiciously.
No.
So, I mean, you're stuck. You have to do this anyway. It's just an unfortunate coincidence that you actually enjoyed the episode.
Well, you know, next time pick something more terrible. I shouldn't say that out loud.
Too late.
You know what? Screw it. Let's change episodes we're talking about right now.
I'm just sitting here and watching another episode. I gotta go to bed in a couple hours.
Oh, you'll be live covering it.
Mm-hmm.
Nah.
All right, what number is the Tuvix episode? We're watching it.
Is that season one or season two?
I want to say two.
So anyway,
like season one ended so early, I have a hard time distinguishing it from season two. And Voyager didn't really progress any in terms of any kind of production level. So there's not really like an easy
or storytelling.
I'm counting that as a production level.
Oh, okay.
So basically,
like there
DS9
was no advancement in how the actors play the characters, how the characters are written, how the series looks. Because even Deep Space Nine had a little bit of a shift in visual style between seasons.
A little bit. It's more drastic between two and three, though.
And, you know, it just makes it really hard to separate those early seasons in a way that no other series has really had for me.
Sense.
Original series?
I guess, but at least with that, if you can remember what color the credits were, you would know if it's a season 3 episode or not. I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
And, if they used the spinny light model.
Mm-hmm. That too.
Alright, enough fucking around. Ken, start reviewing.
So we open up to not Voyager, actually.
Woo!
As we, which you can immediately tell, regardless of whether or not you recognize Lieutenant Barclay, because he's in one of the post Voyager
first contact
uniforms that they had. When did they adopt them in DS9?
Season five, right.
And he's clearly at one of the last cities on Earth, San Francisco.
Yes, the only other city on Earth.
Nope. New Orleans. Cisco went there.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay.
Those are the two cities on Earth.
Yeah, so what kind of world? No. There is still Paris.
New Orleans, Paris, and San Francisco are the only cities on Earth.
What kind of a world is it where New Orleans is a city that survives?
Oh, that's cold.
Oh, man.
Well, maybe they've just built up a gradual immunity to destruction.
You know what it probably is? Probably by that point in the future, the Gulf of Mexico is just not even there anymore.
It
shifted to the Midwest.
It got so tired of trying to destroy it. It swallowed Florida instead.
Like, when the whale probe came back and, like, evaporated all the water, when it all came back down, the Gulf just kind of stayed empty.
It's like, we ain't going back there.
Well, that's when they evaporated the water, uncovered New Orleans. In the last 100 years, they rebuilt it.
Ah, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, sure. Reinforced it, finally.
Well, I mean, they've got all kinds of, like, weather modification and stuff. Certainly they can make, like, levees that hold.
They probably just beamed it to higher ground.
Higher city. Sure. Anyway, so... Barkley is, answered the door to find Deanna Troi, who has come to visit, and... Well, he's been living here for 2 years, and he's not yet unpacked, evidently.
Now, well, okay, so to be fair, this is Barkley, and there's no telling when he's going to lose a job.
Yes.
So, like, this is just kind of prudent. He may need to move at short notice.
Not like when he greets Troi. He's like, would you like some water or some coffee or... I don't know, wait, I remember your character trait. You like chocolate ice cream. Let me get you some chocolate ice cream. Then he forgets about it, and Troy's like, where the fuck is my ice cream, bitch?
So he wanders upstairs like, you know, like a dog that just got kicked.
Also, check out his staircase, too, because I'm pretty sure he put this together, because the railing is against the wall, not on the outside where it would stop you from slipping and falling off the stairs.
Right, that seems a little, that seems a little dangerous.
Well, what if the railing against the wall is his secondary backup? The first backup's already failed and collapsed.
He just hasn't replaced it yet.
Maybe.
He hasn't unpacked it.
Maybe there's a force field on the facing side, and since he didn't bump into it, we just can't see that it's there.
That would make sense.
Oh my goodness. So he needs free therapy. It's basically why
she's the shittiest reason to call Troi. Hey, you want to hang out for a couple hours? Sure, that'd be fun.
Let me talk and cry and.
So now that you're down here, I need help.
Also, he has a cat that's named Neelix. Because that's not...
Well, I think that's a compromise, because Neelix himself was barely in the episode otherwise. I think they were just, like, fulfilling contractual obligations. Like, Ethan Phillips has a thing that says, okay, Neelix is in the show this many scenes and this many episodes per season.
But, like... I like her reaction. She's like, "Oh, Neelix, that's an unusual name." Okay.
We should introduce it to Data's cat Spot.
Which I'm pretty sure she's insulting him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, insulting both of them, really.
Yeah.
Now, are we insulting the cat, Barkley, or
Barkley Data? Probably the cat a little bit too. Not really sure she's a cat person.
Troi. So he starts his story. So he's kind of lost and.
Because get this, he's lost his job.
No, not yet. you feel like that's like her initial reaction is like, "Yep, lost yourself." You mean like lost your employment? It's like no, in Voyager. Oh, you poor soul. what could be a worse
Damn it, Red, you're easier to treat when you're a spider person.
I kind of wish there was a reference to that in this episode. We have to watch that episode.
Yeah, we were.
We should actually.
We should do like an all Barkley month.
Yes!
I suggested that at some point in the last 10 days. Oh. You were just stealing my ideas.
Is it just me? Or
you've stolen
like...
mine before, so.
Because I said, like, we need to find a way to get Barkley into an original series episode so that we actually could have.
Yeah, I remember the conversation now.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or is Voyager's opening theme just, like, really want to make you want to take a nap?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
does.
Pretty music, but yeah, it's not exciting.
Yeah, it's like,
however,
it's
not as sedate as the DS9 theme.
It's not.
Well,
for some reason,
the second DS9 theme is not so bad about that.
Well, no, but the first one,
yeah,
that is some.
I don't know, for some reason the DS9 theme I'm still fine with. Something about...
Because you remember the theme from season 4 to 7.
No, I haven't gotten back to season 4 yet.
But you still remember that one. You don't remember the original one.
That's true. I guess that's true.
Like, that is what's taking its place in your mind.
I guess I don't mind DS9's theme so much. Just something about Voyager's theme.
Voyager's theme is worse. I mean, there's no question about that.
It suffered... Well, Voyager's theme also suffers by being linked to Voyager.
Voyager's theme is perfect in credits music. It's not suitable for the opening.
No, it's not get you enthused. It's like, I'm lost in Voyager. Smash cut to...
Well, to be fair, that's usually how it is when you decide you're going to watch Voyager.
Yeah, I guess so. This episode, you know. Except
the show notwithstanding, I really do like the look of the ship design.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Production-wise, that ship looks really fucking sharp.
It does. It looks nice.
I always thought it was a little too puffy looking.
A little too puffy. A little too phallic for your taste.
Not phallic, but...
It is a little bit.
I get... Well, I don't know what your phallic...
That really depends
like.
On your dong.
No, it's too, like, bulbous. Okay, I guess it is in some respects phallic-looking, but...
the opening shows it penetrating the clouds, just, you know... I mean, come on, seriously.
It's an upside-down garden trowel with warp nacelles attached to the sides of it.
And this is supposed to be a good thing.
Yes.
I like the bridge. I like the bridge on the Voyager.
To me, I think it just seems like... The design of Voyager is trying too hard to do, like, the characteristic traits of Enterprises, but smaller and more distinctive, if that makes sense. Like, you know, instead of having an oval that goes out sideways, it has an oval that goes front to back. Ooh.
So anyway, Barclay has been... Barclay, as he tells Deanna his story while stroking his cat, not even his
pussy.
I'm disappointed you didn't go for that yourself, Ken.
Anyway, he's been working on the Pathfinder project, which is something that Starfleet has apparently stuck into a small shadowy corner to say they're looking for Voyager while nobody else really gives a shit. Which is how this episode feels, to be honest with you. Am I the only one who got that impression?
I mean,
they picked Barclay to be on their team.
If you look at it from a practicality standpoint, like, okay, yeah, we know that somewhere out there in the distant reaches of the galaxy, there is a starship that's lost and trying to come home. We have absolutely no technological means to accomplish that right now, but it's going to look bad if we're just like, well, good luck with that. So let's just, you know, start up a program, say we're doing something, maybe a miracle will happen, and we'll get this fixed.
So yeah, that's basically how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's incorrect...
It's realistic, I'm not, like, criticizing them for it.
Yeah.
But it does feel kind of like, damn.
And I don't think that's an... I don't think it's an incorrect interpretation of what the episode's showing us, either.
No, I don't. I mean, it would have been, illogical, if it was like this big, you know, hugely stacked endeavor.
And Barclay was on board.
But regardless, it makes sense that it is a smaller thing because there's like a dozen people there at most.
Yeah. But conveniently, they have their own holodeck.
Conveniently.
Well, I'd imagine like a holodeck comes standard in most Ramada inns in the future, though. I mean,
instead of a swimming pool.
Yeah.
So
they don't really care about finding them. So they sounded the tech support guys that they didn't have any faith in. Like, what happened if they put like Geordi and Data on this project? They would have the ship back within an hour.
They wouldn't have not have paid it through season 2.
It would have been a B plot.
Yeah, basically. So he's under the command of a bald guy who is not Robert Picardo. I forget what his name is already.
Me too.
He just looks kind of like the Doctor, but not quite.
More not quite.
Like, from a distance at first I thought, wait, is that... Oh, never mind. So, what's the best way to describe all this without tripping over technobabble? long story short, he has a theory that he wants to brief Admiral Paris, Tom Paris's father, on, in regards to being able to open up a tiny wormhole to send a message through, correct? And there's a lot of stuff about how certain things pass through the range of the Midas Array and et cetera and so on and so forth. I'm not going to sit here and try and explain Star Trek Technobabble because that's like half the plot of the episode.
Like, basically, the on the book's intent of the project is they're trying to develop a new communications method so they can send messages to Voyager in the Delta Quadrant.
Or send to the Delta Quadrant at all.
Barclay wants to modify that a little bit to make it possible to have two-way communication instead.
Correct. So it's
thus
not,
conflict.
Yes, basically they want to be able to just say, "Hi, we're here. Don't die." Barclay has larger ambitions, but he's very neurotic, and you can see why his command would not really have the utmost faith in what he's saying.
And here's the problem I have with this episode, because, and this should not be surprising considering it's, you know, Voyager writing, but Barclay's been reset back to his first appearance.
Yeah, that is true.
Because over the course of his time in Next Generation, Barclay gained some degree of confidence and ability to, like, speak to people. And that is just all gone here.
Yeah. Well, no, it's only gone here when the plot needs it to be gone.
The way I took it as...
He is talking perfectly fine to Ayn all of the episode, except specifically when talking to Admiral Paris.
Paris, and even his commander, for that matter. I took it as... Because they even talk about him relapsing in the episode. I took it as that he... And, I mean, this can happen with people that have, you know, neurosis and so forth, is that something can happen and it just, you know, it can cause you to relapse and slip back into your old habits. And I took it as the nearly hope, like, he's been basically given a basically hopeless job, and he's taken that and poured so much of himself into it that he's gotten to the point where he's just, man, I'm defending a Voyager episode.
Well, the other alternative,
well, actually,
see...
you know, it does kind of make sense because, okay, the people when he was on the Enterprise, he also got more comfortable around the people because he was with these people all the time.
Right.
Whereas he'd never talked to Admiral Paris before in his life, probably.
Basically trying to tell him one of the most important things of his career, besides saving the universe.
talking to someone you've never met before, it can be a lot different than with someone who you talk with all the time.
Especially when you have that past history and when it's somebody who's say so, basically whatever they say is going to determine whatever you're doing. Regardless, like everything hinges on a Paris saying okay, basically, effectively.
The other thing I could see with this too is that, like, Barclay got comfortable with the people on the Enterprise, and they kind of learned to understand Barclay also.
Right.
So he had more chance to get his ideas expressed, and probably the whole time he's been working on this project, he's barely connected with anybody else on the staff because they will not give him the chance.
Yeah, see, that works for me. I don't think you have to reach very far to see somebody slip back into bad old habits.
No, probably not. It's kind of annoying just because, like, Barclay had made strides and most of that ends up getting lost in this episode.
Yeah, I can see both sides of that too, easily. Because I can't.
Barclay is so screwed up in the head, though. I'd imagine whatever strides forward he made were temporary at best.
I think if he had stayed on the Enterprise, he still would have continued progressing. But as soon as he leaves, it's just gone.
Yeah.
Without Troy there to calm him.
Well, just without, like, you know, his circle of friends who he's comfortable with, his like extensive support system is all gone, and he's got to start over again.
Like, cause, like, one of the first things that comes up when he starts talking to Deanna earlier in the episode is like Jordy. So yeah, that makes sense to me. But anyway, his commander does try, in spite of like shutting him down, he does like try to, you know, reach out,
draw him out,
and he's like, you know, hey, come have coffee, you know.
Because nothing's more fun than hanging out with your boss at home.
Yeah, come have coffee. Hey, you know, my sister's pretty easy.
She has a great personality.
These are all basically the things his commander was saying to him.
Yes,
now, here's my collection
are.
Of extremely fragile and priceless vases.
Well, the thing, like, I can also see from his commander's point of view, all, you know, like, he's seeing Barclay having trouble incorporating with the rest of the team, and, like, he can't order them to, like, make more effort the way Picard did with Geordi. But, you know, he will try himself to, like, start that process, build the first bridge, and just try to get it going from there.
You know, points to him there. Barclay doesn't go home. Instead, he goes into the holodeck where he has recreated the crew of the of Voyager to what he knows. So you still have Chakotay and Taurus dressed up as Maquis.
And importantly, everybody has their hairstyles basically right from the first episode.
They do.
Like, I really appreciate the attention to detail. Doing the holograms.
I didn't even notice that until the end of the episode. I mean, like, Chakotay and Taurus stick out.
Yeah.
But the hair I didn't notice until, like, you had this scene with the Janeway hologram towards the end, and then you cut to the actual Janeway at another point. I'm like, oh. Points to them. But yeah, so apparently the holograms are his only friends.
The one part where they didn't quite get things, well, I guess some of it could have been updated from what the doctor told them, but, like, you know,
right.
The doctor may not have reported that their chief medical officer got killed, for one thing, so, like, that absence could be notable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tricky, because, like, there's a lot of detail minded in this, but there's also some things that sort of, that should be represented but aren't.
Sure.
I think the chief medical officer getting killed would be explained away, because they wonder, how is this hologram so advanced and not a hologram in his behaviors? And he'd say, well, because I've been running for 4 years straight or whatever.
Right, because that episode...
Yeah, well, why? Because...
The episode y'all reviewed last time was, like, 2 seasons before this or something, right? Season or two?
No, it's season...
Four?
Four.
Because, yeah, I mean... I do remember they were using the First Contact uniforms at that point, at the very least.
Yes, yeah, and this is after Andy Dick, right?
Yeah,
right.
So from what just the fact that he'd been running for 4 years, yeah, they would have known that. Okay, yeah, he's
chief
been
medical
their chief medical officer for
since they got there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, after having this extensive card game on the Voyager, he can't sleep because he can't keep his mind off of Voyager. Dude! So he goes back into the
holodeck.
He goes back into the holodeck to have a hologram of a hologram give him a massage.
A hologram of a hologram.
That's what it is! Holographically recreated a hologram. Oh, God. There's really something wrong in there, but just besides Barclay himself.
I was like, how bored Picardo looks while giving the massage.
He has his elbow dug into his shoulder and just propped his head up.
Well, I mean, you know, first season version Doctor, too, kind of.
Yeah, and, you know... He would know
about
Picard's
that. Just like, really going to massage a dude on camera.
Uh-huh.
He would know about that variety of the medical hologram.
Mm-hmm. He probably just, you know, copy and pasted all the protocols into his Voyager simulation.
Sure.
Makes perfect sense.
So he,
plus with all those Andy Dicks running around on the starships now, it's not like anybody would miss an EMH Mark I.
Yes, so he can only fall asleep on the hologram recreation of Voyager.
Oh, Barclay.
It's like you're watching just a descent into absolute madness.
Well, that's a Barclay episode.
Great. So he has a discussion with Hologram Tom and Hologram Harry, and then
where's Hologram Dick?
There's no Hologram Dicks.
Are you sure about that? Because the doctor made some improvements to his program.
And he likes these guys a lot, too. Just saying, he likes them a lot.
Well, Barclay's, he has problems, therefore. It's natural he'd be... No, there's nothing natural about this. This is just wrong.
No, it makes... I mean, the hologram thing has always made sense just because it's people who can't, like, you know...
Oh, the hologram thing, yes. But wanting to hang out with, like, Tom and Harry, no.
Oh, that hurts.
It's just all an extension of it, though.
Oh, that hurts. Laugh. Thanks.
It's just so sad that he didn't replicate the crew of the Enterprise.
Well, he's not working on their problem right now.
And plus, didn't he delete all that stuff?
He's Barclay. He could remake that in, like, 15 minutes.
You know he's got a backup. You always have a secondary backup.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And a backup.
That's what a good engineer does.
So after he has had his morning conversation with his BFFs, he he's out there where his commander and Admiral Paris are meeting. And damn, Tom's dad is a lot older than I would have expected.
Which explains a lot about Tom, actually, that... He was a late in life baby when daddy didn't really have time to mess around and be a father.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Tom's dad is a Starfleet officer, so just by that alone, he didn't have time to mess with his kid.
Yeah, although it's kind of great that even for, like, actual Tom has, like, one line in the episode, and, like, his daddy issues just pour out in the way he delivers that line. But I'll get to that later. So Barclay tries to give his plan to Admiral Paris, but he has difficulty speaking, which I can relate to. To authority figures. You know, lots of people have been there. He tries to get...
Also, he has this moment of realization where he says, oh shit, I should not have said anything just now. Oh god, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Yes, but yeah. By that point, he's committed.
Yeah, he's like...
Whoops.
Until he gets to that point where his commander's trying to shut him down, and then he finds his voice, and subsequently insults the Admiral.
Well, like, his commander tries to shut him down, and the Admiral's like, no, wait, I want to hear this. What do you got for me?
That's your son is dead!
No, his son is not dead. That's the point. At least he hopes. Commander Harkins, that's his name, because Deanna didn't ask. Is like, did you like go to apologize to Commander Harkins afterwards? Like, no. No.
Should I have?
It's like... I wanted to fine tune my plan. She's like, just cut the shit, Barclay. What happened? So, to focus his thoughts, instead of working with his colleagues, he
well, I want to point out that once on Troy here.
Yes.
It's nice to see the evolution of how they wrote Troy to better and better to actually sound like she is a counselor
rather than a psychic idiot. Sounds like a psychiatrist in this episode. And she
Yes, they've greatly improved her intelligence through better writing of learning how to write a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than someone who just senses what you feel and repeats it back to you.
Right. But no, so instead of going to his colleagues or his commander or anyone like that, he instead goes to the holographic Voyager meeting room with his holographic Voyager pals.
Ken, fan.
What? What?
Fan.
Damn.
I don't hear it.
Well, it comes and goes. You're probably moving your head wrong.
So are you breathing?
Like, I'm trying not to.
As you should. I love the scene in the meeting room, too.
Yes. Right. He's broke up everybody to just, you know, defer to him as well.
He's got the finest group of yes men he could possibly ask for.
It's his own Voyager self-insert fan fiction.
Yes,
it really is.
That's where I was going. It's like, yeah. He is the most popular, best, smartest, random new recruit on the Voyager.
The thing is,
the Barkley version of Star Trek V.
The thing is, if Barkley actually was on Voyager, he would be the smartest person and probably the most capable person on that ship.
Well, yeah, he probably would be.
Yeah,
but that's thanks to being on the Enterprise beforehand.
Well, yes.
I mean,
even Enterprise's Flotsman Jetsam is smarter than what's on Voyager.
Like, there's still, like, part of me that wants to see the timeline, the alternate reality where Voyager had Barkley as a carryover character. And just, like, as soon as they get stranded in Delta Quadrant, Barkley is just sitting there with his head in his hands, wondering why fate hates him so much. Like, it would just explain why that ship of all things got pulled, you know, halfway across the galaxy. Because Barkley was on board.
Shit. It would make a lot of sense, though. He was would have been the character in that one episode of Voyager, though.
Yes, he would have.
He would have engineered the transwarp drive.
It would have been him and Tom Paris, not Janeway.
Yeah. And they would have had Salamander babies.
Yeah. Because nature finds a way.
Oh, God. Oh, God. So, anyway...
And Barkley would have been the salamander that turned female for the purposes of reproduction.
Yep.
Basically, his commander catches him with his pants down. Thankfully, not completely literally, but metaphorically.
Right.
He just came in at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. to be a complete self-insertion fanfic. So, anyway, he determines that Barkley is...
having a little relapse.
A little relapse.
Because, like, Harkins knows Barkley's history. Mm-hmm. Because apparently, like, psychiatric records and such are not sealed in the 24th century. You know, he knows about the whole Hall addiction thing, and... But,
now,
you know.
my question, though, is... as it is still... technically, they don't ever like to refer to it as such, but it is basically a military.
He is the commanding officer.
He probably would be privy to such things when it was being done by other Starfleet personnel. If Barkley had gone to a private counselor, then it would not be.
Somehow I like to think that in the world of Starfleet and the Federation, there are no psychiatrists that aren't on the Starfleet payroll.
There's probably not anybody that's not on the Starfleet payroll as far as Earth's concerned.
Probably. Because, like, do you ever see, like, just a regular doctor that's not wearing a uniform?
A hot dog vendor?
No, but, like, yeah, so Harkins...
That says some dark things about Starfleet, I think, though.
Well,
that's
thank
not,
Deep Space Nine for that. No, but Harkins knows Barkley's history overall and is just like, this is not going as well as I hoped it would when I brought you in.
Yeah, so, goodbye.
Take a day.
So he takes a day to go see Admiral Paris, who finally lets him in after he frightens the secretary.
I do like that line. Well, I like the secretary's line, too. He's still here. He is staring at me and listening to everything I say right now.
Like, she doesn't even have to describe it. Just, he's been here for 5 hours, sir. He's been standing in the same spot.
And you've just been staring out her window, looking at clouds.
Probably, yes. Oh, can you blame him? And I do like the, line is like, it's like, yes, Commander Harkman is an informant of your attachment to the crew. It tells me you've been spending time with a holographic recreation of my son.
It's like, I find that a bit disturbing.
Yeah, it's like, so do we, Admiral.
Well, and that's kind of the point, because, like, Voyager didn't ever deal with this really in any depth, so, like, they have to do that to make the audience understand, okay, this is not a normal thing Barclay's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
It's a good way to fold that part of it in.
That also might explain some of the regression, because you can explain that he had a problem and went back to it, but if he was just how he was before, if he was just where he advanced to, you basically wouldn't have a plot for the episode, I don't think, as much.
You would kind of have to think, too, that, like, holodeck addiction probably works like any other form, where the only really way to deal with it is to stay away from it as much as you can. And as soon as Barclay went to do, you know, the hologram simulation of Voyager to try to work on whatever theory he had, it just kind of slid down from there.
Oh, and especially since his job probably required having to use a holodeck anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because the entire reason that they had a hologram simulation of the Voyager there was so that
things.
They would have as much as they knew what the Voyager crew had to work with.
Yeah, that's right. A good point.
Yeah, that's true.
It's their version of getting the cardboard box full of supplies that match what's available on the capsule.
Yeah. Well, I also have to imagine, just like, for practicality's sake, the holodeck, we never really see it used like this, but just nowadays, they'll use virtual representations of things to test, you know, planes and plans and military engagements and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know. So, I have to imagine that Starfleet does the same thing with the holodeck probably pretty regularly, and probably more often than the frivolous uses that you see for most of the series.
There's legitimate uses in addition to the recreational uses.
Like, they abuse the holodeck as just a recreational thing, but it has got to have practical applications. Like, I can imagine that, like, you could probably make advancements in surgery just through that. Just if you could, like, fully recreate what a human being is in the holodeck, then you have something to, you know, base it off of.
Actually, I think they mentioned that in that Last Next Generation episode. Well, no, it wasn't there. It was, there was some episode where...
Okay, so I'm not... either way, I'm not far off base.
Yeah, there was some episode where, like, some experimental surgery had only done it on holograms so far.
Okay,
that
yeah,
was
so.
The episode where Worf breaks his back, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Where Dr. Lack of Ethics is, you know, trying to...
Dr. Lack of Ethics.
I believe that's an Ethiopian name.
You gotta kind of you gotta say it a little bit faster, though. Dr. Lack of.
That's why I didn't say it faster, Ken.
Shit.
No, I would kind of see the origins of the holodeck technology too being, you know, scientific and other industrial applications, and it's just like, you know, we could also, like, put TV shows in this thing.
Dig around this.
Yeah,
well, all technology takes off when pornography is introduced.
Speaking of dicking around.
Yes, thank you. You took the bait. It's also not untrue.
Just ask Riker. Probably Barclay, too, for that matter.
Yes, so... Basically, the Admiral kind of... He takes what he told him as... just a platitude to get him out of the room. Which, well, it actually I can see why he would take it as that, because that's how I read the scene.
Right.
But it turns out he didn't, but, you know, get there in a second. Because he thinks he's just trying to get rid of him. And Deanna says she cannot, you know, give him free clearance to go back to work because, dude.
Right. Barclay wanted Deanna to call the Admiral or call Hawkins or Harkins, you know, whoever. Call somebody in her official status as a Starfleet counselor and say, yeah, he's fine. Let him come back to work.
Tell them I'm sane.
Look, I called you here on false pretenses from the Enterprise to do this for me. Just go ahead.
And she says, you know, he's suffering acute anxiety. And actually, he does a good job in this episode of demonstrating somebody who, like, really is just having anxiety problems. Like, real, like, dude, you need to get some help from him.
Yes, well, I mean, that's the benefit of getting a really good actor.
Yeah. His actor does a great job.
Always has.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like how they never address, like, why Voyager is so important to him, which is where I think he just kind of, like, latched on to it because he was stuck in this impossible position for so long.
Well, you know, I think it just also depends on Barclay's background.
Yeah.
You know, they have the simulation of the ship and probably had a simulation of the crew also.
For whatever purpose.
And like, just as it went on, Barclay kind of just slid into more and more comfort working with the holograms.
So, okay, like...
Plus, the Voyager holograms are the only things that couldn't hurt him.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Voyager started in, what, 96?
Five.
95. And...
Like, January of 95.
First contact was in 98?
97?
97? 97?
I think.
I think it was the year after Independence Day, I want to say. So, if you assume that he got shuffled over there off the Enterprise after then, he's been working on this, what, 2-3 years, maybe?
At a maximum? I mean, he was in that apartment for two years.
2 years. Okay, yeah, so he's been working on it for 2 years. And he's been doing that for 2 years. I can see where somebody would just eventually kind of just... It's entirely possible to just kind of lose yourself in that.
Was Barclay on board the Enterprise during First Contact?
Yeah, because he was on Earth.
He's in First Contact.
Yes, okay.
Fortunately, he was one of the members of the engineering team that went down to Earth, not the ones that were on the ship and got assimilated.
That's right. Yes, I remember now. Okay.
Right. He got to meet Zebron Cochran and everything.
Uh-huh. Yes, and he actually, you know, talked to Cochran a little bit more coherently than he talked to most people in this episode.
Which is kind of funny, I think.
Well, and that's where I'm kind of coming from with, you know, the character had a major backslide in portrayal because even talking to Cochran, who anybody would have some hero worship over.
Right, right.
At least as far as the engineering teams mostly, but you know.
I think it feels more like intention than carelessness in the writing, I think.
You know, I'm wondering if in First Contact, remember the line where Geordi tells Cochran about the statue? I wonder if that was originally a Barclay line, but they shifted the line to Geordi because it made more sense in a film to have Geordi deliver a line instead of throw his side character a line in the middle of nowhere.
Right, right. This is probably like the most seriously we'll discuss a Voyager episode as being, you know, having proper writing intent, I think.
Probably.
So anyway, since Deanna won't give him the pass, he decides the next best thing to do is to break into the facility and do it himself. Because that won't end poorly or anything.
I love how all Starfleet facilities have, you know, sophisticated computer locks on doors, but the panel to access the working bits is always unlocked.
Like, I think our ship nowadays is more secure.
He's an engineer. That's like trying to lock out a locksmith.
This is true. In Star Trek terms, yeah, that is true. You can't, you really, it's like, since there's no, like, physical locks on anything Starfleet makes, you basically can't keep an engineer out of anything. They could, like, rob you blind and you never know it.
What they should have done is they should have posted an armed security guard there.
Yeah.
You think?
Well, okay, but conversely, this is Earth. You know, people don't break in places. Nothing bad happens, so there's not really a need to have armed security at a facility on Earth.
Starfleet is technically a military; they're just not a very good one.
Well, okay, Starfleet's an effective enough military when they need military security. But again, it's Earth. They don't need that there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even the U.S. Army has security to keep out people in the U.S. Army from things.
Hmm.
So, you know.
But Starfleet's always been portrayed as...
Are they going to be putting a guard on their project, on the stuff for their project that...
Right, this is a low security thing in the first place.
That's true.
Like, there's no... There's...
Really, the solution to all this problem is they should have had him committed to an asylum in the first place.
Yeah.
So, the other answer is, instead of having him, you know, break through the door, he just beams in.
Damn. So anyway...
Well, I mean, why not?
Yeah, well, anyway. So he starts fiddling with things and sends a beam out with the Midas satellite thing. And ends up managing to open up that itty-bitty wormhole. And he sends a message through it.
Okay, so we need to backtrack here, because, like, just for setup.
Okay.
So there's three possible places that they need to transmit to reach Voyager, because based on where the ship was when the Doctor was transmitted through, where he reported their position,
right,
the time since and the course they were on, they decided that Voyager could be in one of these three locations, most likely. So Barclay has three tries to contact them.
Right, important
for how the...
Okay, I kind of lost that in the techno babble. I just thought he kept trying the same thing over and over again. I get it, okay. Yeah, I think
looking for aluminum Fosdex, the shaving cream atom. It's somewhere in this area.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Nice.
Oh, damn.
Nice.
Okay, so anyway, unfortunately, Harkins comes in with the security crew and is about to shut him down, but he takes off into the holodeck. I like how
Harkins and the security officers just stand there and do nothing while Barclay slowly, states the order to transfer all control to the holodeck.
He slowly stops. He slowly jogs and stops and talks, jogs slower, and then he takes off running. Now, I will actually give credit though, just to the direction a bit. The trick he uses to get the security officers to go down one hall instead of the other is pretty good. Like,
I also like that Harkins actually gives the order, stun him if you have to.
Yeah.
Smoke him if you got him.
You don't hear that very often in these situations where someone's basically ordering security, shoot him.
Yeah.
You know, try to apprehend him peacefully. No, just shoot him. Save us some time here. This is out of hand.
Yeah.
Harkins has had enough of this bullshit. He's ready for this to just be over with.
I mean, getting stunned doesn't hurt you that much. Go ask Geordi LaForge. After all, it was not the stuns that hurt him. It was the fall.
Being thrown into the wall repeatedly.
Yeah.
That's space retards.
Yes. You know what they say about, falling out of the sky? It's not the fall that kills you. It's the sudden stop at the end.
It is the fall that kills you if you have a heart attack in the process of it.
Well, yeah, but then it's not
the
fall
that kills you. It's me.
It's the heart attack.
But the fall throws you off.
Well, what if you just like slip out of the airplane?
Well, then it's gonna be the stop that kills you.
Somebody had to put the banana peel down in the first place.
Ah,
also true. Harkins. Sets the quote-unquote warp core to explode. And then quote-unquote kills B'Elanna.
Because Barclay's, like, locked out all the controls to everything in the actual facility, so, like, they can't even unplug the holodeck.
So, actually, it is kind of a clever thing to effectively kill the hologram.
Yeah.
And force his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Points to his programming, though, when Janeway orders everybody to abandon ship, she stays on the bridge.
Yeah.
I think I like that.
Of course, like ordering to abandon ship when there's 20 seconds left before it explodes is probably more of a token gesture.
That's probably more of a Janeway move.
No, I just mean in general practice, that's kind of a token maneuver, because nobody's going to have time to get anywhere.
Yeah, but I still...
She just wants the black box to record that. Yeah,
look,
I told him to leave.
I'm trying to at least give props to a fake Janeway, at the very least.
Well, and that's later, why, like, that's why this later whole episode, the Voyager crew, is so tolerable, because, like, they're all simulations based on records they had from before the ship launched and the little bits and pieces the Doctor told them. So it makes perfect sense for them to all be absurd non-characters.
Yes.
Because they've cut out all the terrible human bits that make them so hateable.
Janeway's
the perfect captain.
It's the same way that I can watch season one. It's the same way I can watch season one episodes and not hate it entirely, because there's an excuse for it to be as bad as it is, which evaporates more and more the further into the series you get.
So anyway, eventually, Barclay gets cornered. In spite of putting himself behind a force field, he eventually has to shut the entire thing down. Then we cut back to the Delta Quadrant, or cut to the Delta Quadrant for the first time in the episode, with 7 minutes left.
And oh, look, the first thing we see is Neelix.
Oh, yeah. Although I do like, you know, basically 7 of 9 telling him to not quit his day job in regards to singing.
Neelix is completely tone deaf.
It's like, I sound so good in the sonic showers, perhaps you should best confine your efforts to those locations. It's like, it's bad when a Borg is telling you that.
I just had this idea of trying to sing in a sonic shower when the whole thing's screaming around you.
I think that's the joke.
Well, I mean, it's the normal joke, too, of, you know, you think you sound great singing in the shower. And they tried to map that to a Star Trek context, but like...
It ends up being a double joke because it's Neelix.
Yeah.
Neelix would
say, except with these writers, I don't even think there's more than the one obvious joke. Look, I don't think that second joke we're interpreting was actually part of the intent.
The rest of the episode is good.
Well, intent or not, it happened. There is a double joke there.
It works both ways.
I just don't want to give them any more credit than is necessary.
Well, I'm giving them credit for the rest of the episode. Why not?
That's because the rest of the episode is actually legitimately good and almost thought-provoking in places.
Yeah, it doesn't... You know, the writers just don't evaporate as soon as they go to another scene, do they?
Yes, they do.
Maybe the writers just didn't give a shit about Voyager either, so they didn't try, but when they get to write about Next Generation characters, they put forth some effort.
Probably.
Somehow that just rubbed off on the first line that came afterwards. But it turns out that they're actually getting the message. So they don't have long before the wormhole collapses.
And of course, the only place it's noticed is 7 of 9 storage unit.
Of course.
No, that's the inexplicable astrometrics lab that they built for reasons unknown.
Yes. So 7 of 9 storage closet.
No, that's the cargo bay.
Oh, okay. So anyway, they end up trying to send something back. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Barclay is being escorted, where Admiral Paris suddenly runs up and is like, "Hey, look, I looked over your stuff, and it looks like it's really cool, actually. It might work."
Hey,
like,
guys, what's going on here?
It's like, what's going on in this thread? but no such luck. He's like, "No, I tried it without getting your permission. It's screwed up. Oh, well." But, lo and behold, suddenly they get Voyager signal. So, they transmit, you know, their ship logs. And God, they're going to have some surprises when they read that. their personnel files. These are the people that are dead. And these are the stray cats we picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And
here's all the times I violated the Prime Directive. Here's all the times I haven't when I should have.
Picard looks over the hat just like, God, can we leave him there?
Yeah, and then she becomes his boss.
Admiral Janeway.
Thanks, Nemesis.
Is that the worst thing you think Nemesis did?
It does make sense. They promoted her to the point where she wouldn't be able to endanger anyone.
Well, I mean, she wouldn't be able to...
She keeps losing her desk in her office.
If
I was working in the Starfleet headquarters building when she got promoted and put in there, I would steal the desk every night.
Look at it like this. How many times has Picard or Sisko betrayed Admiral orders? Or at least...
There's a time they blew up the Admiral's head.
That wasn't an admiral.
Or at least skirted around them. So I don't think Janeway being an admiral is putting anybody in too much danger.
No, that's why she has a desk job.
Right.
Like, that's the whole point.
Eventually, she's going to need her own ship, and she's going to need a pilot, and she's going to look to Troy.
Oh.
I don't think all admirals get their own ships. And to Ken's other question, I can't really point out any one thing as being the worst thing Nemesis did, because Nemesis itself is the worst thing Nemesis did.
God, are we ever going to review that?
No.
Nope.
Wow, you do have a limit.
I have watched that movie. I watched that movie in theaters when it came out. I paid to see that movie.
Oh, you.
And then I watched it again at Hey Mickey's house.
You poor son.
I am not watching. We both fell asleep watching it because it's that boring.
You poor son of a bitch. You actually spent money on that.
Well, I didn't. I've told the story many times. I thought the script I read was fanfic. I didn't think that was actually going to be the movie.
Then how far, I feel like I've asked this before, but how far into the movie did it take you to realize, oh no, that's the actual script?
The wedding.
Didn't take you long, did it?
Actually, no, it was not even the wedding. It was the scene in the Romulan Senate when everybody got turned to stone.
So basically the first scene of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first scene of the movie.
Yes. Yes, I knew immediately, oh shit, what did I do?
How much did your butt clench at that point?
Well, I can't remember in that kind of detail.
How much did you shit yourself?
Well, let's see. I had been staying at my grandmother's house for a while, and she cooked with a lot of Crisco, so the shitting myself probably was not necessarily to do with the movie.
Why not blame it on the movie?
But no, Nemesis is the worst thing Nemesis did, and you cannot make me watch that movie again.
Damn. So we're doing Nemesis next week, right?
Now, if you want to, Ken, in all seriousness, if you want to round up a couple more people to talk about Nemesis.
No, I don't know enough people that like Star Trek.
Like, you know, you are perfectly free to do that, and we will put it up as an episode.
No, it wouldn't be any fun if you weren't suffering with it.
Okay, then.
Now you know how we felt last time we did Voyager.
This is true.
Yep. This is your penance, Ken.
Except he liked it. What kind of penance is that?
You're the one who made the decision. I don't know. I was surprised. I went in expecting the worst. My expectations were bottom of the barrel. That probably made this episode seem even better than it actually was.
Well, there you go.
So anyway, after they transmit everything and Janeway doesn't let Tom speak to his father. Or maybe he just didn't want to, because at the toast they had.
Yeah, there's kind of that too.
Okay, I love this bit, because like they had this toast to whoever this guy is. Go Barkley. man, they're gonna be surprised when they get back to Earth. And then Tom is just, he's like, "You want to do the honors, Tom?" And he's like, "To my dad." I just thought he's still out there, I guess. Like, there's like, so like, he needs to go speak to Troy. I mean, seriously, there are issues there, and it's like, it's the only line he has in the entire episode, because again, Janeway doesn't let him speak to his father.
So Tom's issues with his father are not a new revelation as of this episode.
No, they're not, but they reminded me of them just from like that one line. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, now I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And they've looked up Barclay's, the doctors looked up Barclay's medical records.
Because every ship in Starfleet has a copy of all the personnel files of everyone else anywhere in Starfleet, just in case.
Now that's where you have to question the medical files. Not with Harkins, because that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But why can some bumfuck ship that's lost, you know, halfway across the universe find it?
And then tells it to the entire crew.
At a celebration.
Yeah,
well, and this is, and everyone, because the doctor's kind of an asshole.
And this is the part. Okay. This is the part where I wish there would have been a reference to Barkley turning into a spider.
Yeah, he should have. Just
because that would have been perfect to drop in here.
Oh, and he turned into a spider one time.
Yeah.
Everybody just stands around awkwardly and then kind of raises their glasses silently. And... he got better.
Look, Paris and Janeway turned into...
said some nonsense about it being his spirit guide or something.
Paris and Janeway turned into salamanders. Barclay turning into a spider for an afternoon's not that weird anymore.
So we've talked about racially insensitive Star Trek things before. Is Chakotay really up there? Like, he's there for 7 seasons.
Well, I mean...
I feel like Chakotay would be more offensive if he was more anything.
Right,
he's just cardboard.
That was the thought I was trying to articulate, too. Like, he is so nothing as a character that it's really hard to see him as being offensive.
But all you have there is just basically what feels like stereotypes. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, basically, his only character traits is his stereotype Native American stuff, which is racist, but at the same time, it's so unoffensive in the way it portrays it. Like, it's not, like, you know, he doesn't run a casino and drink all the time. It's just, I mean, it's very respectful in the way it treats it, but the fact that that's all his character is, that's kind of racist.
The DS9 reboot with Chakotay taking over the operation of Quarks.
Oh, God. Oh, okay. Good night, everybody. Can't top that.
It's like, you know, B'Elanna doesn't talk about Klingon stuff nonstop.
On the other hand, she's established in the show as, like, hating her Klingon self.
Okay, so what about Tuvok?
What about Tuvok?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the answer to most questions by the cast member. Like, you know... Except for
Tuvok's kind of the answer as to why aren't there more Vulcans in the show? Because purebred Vulcans are boring.
Yeah. Yes. The only reason Spock was actually interesting because he was a half breed.
Mm-hmm.
He was half human.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and you know, Worf was raised by humans.
Right.
So.
And like, you know, Odo then.
Although I will say a pure-blooded Klingon would. Like, just, you know, full blast honor and glory would be kind of interesting.
As a ship's counselor.
Yes! it's like, I see you have issues. Takes a blade down from the wall. Come at me! And Barclay's just sitting there like, oh my god, I miss Troy.
There's so many races in Star Trek that would be interesting to see as ship's counselors.
Klingon counselor.
Yes.
Vulcan counselor, Ferengi counselor.
That's going in my. Oh my god. Ferengi counselor, don't you mean. Isn't that more like, you know.
An accountant, yes.
Yes.
A Romulan counselor. Everything you tell them, they just hold it against you and use it for blackmail.
Yeah.
A Vulcan counselor.
Yeah, I said a Vulcan counselor.
Okay, yeah, I missed that. But no, it'd be like...
A Vulcan counselor is my favorite idea I've ever had for, like, a hypothetical Star Trek scenario.
So, for your fan fiction?
I don't write Star Trek fan fiction, but if I did...
Sure. Man, that was a quick defense.
Your fear of this is illogical. Stop it.
Man, that response was really quick and defensive.
Also illogical.
Well, I think it would depend, too, like, what kind of Vulcan you had as the ship's counselor, because either, you know, their advice would always be something like, you need to learn to repress this emotional response, it's very illogical, or their response would always be to mind meld and just block it for them, because it's illogical to waste time, you know, working through it over an extended period.
Man, this counselor goes to like 15 clients a day. It's amazing.
The age of the Vulcan counselor would also do it too, because the older they get, the wiser they get, and then more they can cope with other races' emotions and know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah.
That's why Sarek was a lot of fun in the movies.
Yeah.
And the all like two he appeared in.
Yeah, I mean, and that you know, the older they get. I hate to go into new Star Trek, but it does kind of explain why, you know, old Spock would be kind of, you know, a lot more low key as he was in the first Abrams movie.
Well, that was also something, you know, a trait he learned hanging out on Romulus for years.
True. That's right.
He kind of had to be like more...
even in Next Generation, you could see a lot more of the older Spock in it, I thought.
Yeah. But, like, you know, the time he spent with Picard kind of taught him a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, plus, too, at the end of Unification, Spock mind-melded with Picard to, like, get a sampling of what he got out of Sarek, because they never mind-melded directly. So he probably got a little bit of, you know, Sarek's advanced wisdom in there, too.
True.
Oh, and plus, also, I'm just the fact that look how Spock is in the cage.
Yeah. When he's quite young indeed.
Yeah. Huh.
But back to the topic at hand. Ferengi counselors. No, this was actually a good episode of Voyager. Because it wasn't an episode of Voyager.
That one episode of Voyager. That's good.
Yeah, that one good episode of Voyager. Kind of amazing, actually.
And this is the same regular writers, too, weren't they?
Probably. Oh. I think the majority of writing for Voyager was done, like, in-house. I think. To be honest, I never paid that much attention to the credits. I just see Rick Berman's name and I roll my eyes and kind of, you know.
Right. So I fell off the last couple of seasons. Berkeley does appear a couple more times, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Two times, maybe more.
I feel like I feel
at
like
least
he's
two.
I feel like he's, yeah, in the finale.
I don't think.
I thought there was some way we could look this up.
Well, that exceeds my interest level, to be honest, but,
Berkeley.
Like, unless he's in the future part.
It's not Berkeley. What episodes are you in? Yes, he is in, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's actually in 5 episodes of Voyager.
Oh, snap.
Oh, yeah, because he's in the...
He's like, in as many episodes of Voyager as he is Next Generation.
He was in the early episode where he was part of the Doctor's hallucination.
Right. So he's in Pathfinder, Lifeline, and then Season 7, he's in Inside Man, Author, and Endgame.
Okay, so he was in the last episode.
Yeah.
Inside Man's kind of fun in an odd way, I vaguely remember. That might be worth watching at some point.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
I think that's the one where the Barclay hologram comes to visit.
Yeah, I know which one it is. I don't think I've seen it.
Like, I remember it being entertaining, but probably because it was, you know, largely a Barclay episode. Just not with, you know, Voyager
crew.
Well,
it says he appears as a hologram in Season 2 also.
Yeah, in the Doctor's Delusion.
Okay, so that, yeah. So actually, he's actually in more episodes of Voyager than he is Next Generation.
Check Q. See if he's in more episodes of Voyager than Next Generation.
That wouldn't surprise me. I know the Borg is.
Well, yeah, because the Borg was in Next Generation, like, 4 times, I think. And there's seasons in Voyager where the Borg are in more than that.
Yes. Q.
Because that's the thing with Voyager. Like, they will take successful gimmicks from previous series and just run them into the ground.
Okay, let's see here. No, he's only in 3 episodes of Voyager.
Somehow it felt like more.
It did, didn't it?
But suffering often seems magnified.
It's so sad, though, that he was only in that one episode of DS9.
Except he doesn't fit in Deep Space Nine, that's the thing.
I can see a one-off.
He just didn't want to get punched again.
That is the best thing about that episode. It's like, Picard never punched me.
I'm not Picard.
Picard! That's the best thing about Season 1, that one scene.
Yeah, too bad the rest of the episode around it is pretty terrible.
Yeah. But no, I could see them, I mean, he exists in a universe, I could see them doing like a one-off episode with him. Just not, you know, do nothing plot important.
Right. Like, if they were going to have Q in Deep Space Nine a second time, it would have to be after Worf was part of the cast.
Yes.
And just for the sake of dicking around with him.
Yes.
Just showed up at Worf's wedding.
Just like this day following Worf around doing his job while Q's, you know, popping up everywhere to just provoke him for the fun of it.
It's like, why did you go bother the captain? Not again.
Why don't you go visit Captain Picard?
He doesn't have a show anymore. They won't let me in the movies.
Man, a Q movie would have been pretty good.
God.
Well, potentially. I mean, it could have been another Nemesis, for all we know.
It probably would have been another Nemesis, but... Yes. It feels like he was in more episodes of Next Generation 2 than he was...
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, wasn't there like a whole season where he was absent?
Season 5, looks like, yes. Yeah, because he was only in like 8 episodes overall. But to make up for not being in Season 5, he was in 2 episodes of Season 6.
And 2 episodes of Season 1 also.
Right. Back when they knew less was more.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, for the most part, the logic was, you know, have Q turn up once a season.
More or less, yeah.
I'm not sure why Q wasn't in Season 5. I think there might have been a reason for that, but I can't remember.
Probably, I imagine scheduling or whatever.
Possibly, or they were just doing too much other stuff and didn't have a way to fit a Q episode in.
Yeah, scheduling, that's what I said.
Because season, well, I mean, just like the way the season was structured.
Oh, I just meant overall.
Oh, okay.
Scheduling in terms of plots and actors and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are we stuck with for Enterprise?
We don't know yet.
That's too decided.
Oh, that's ominous.
Mickey is bringing in an outside consultant to help us with Enterprise.
And he is currently going through episodes looking for something that will be fun to talk about.
Yes, I instructed Mickey to have him decide.
Something we won't fall asleep during.
Well, that's the hope.
Okay.
But I make no promises, and I take no responsibility.
And that's not
only
that
pick one
do.
That's fun, either good or bad, that will have lots of things to talk about, and no action-heavy episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Of course, Key's been in a shit ton of novels, but what hasn't?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, we can't pick an episode of Enterprise right now, but we could look at original series.
Oh, I want to do the episode about Beauty and Truth, whatever the hell it's called.
Oh, the one with Young Pulaski.
Yes.
Young Pulaski. Okay.
Well, yeah, you can see Pulaski and Bones without their old age makeup on.
Like, is it literally Pulaski?
Is there in truth no beauty?
Is it literally Pulaski's actress?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm not really a...
She was actually in a couple...
I'm only a casual Star Trek fan, so I completely did not even know that.
She was in a couple episodes of the original series.
Huh.
This is Season 3, Episode 5.
Okay. Well, that was entirely too fast. What do we pad the show with now?
Or we could just, you know...
Your mom.
Nah.
She fills up space.
Or we could just not, I guess.
Talk about how...
That works for me.
If anybody has anything, I don't. I'm still kind of... I don't know. Most of my week when I have not been working has been basically on painkillers, which I'm about to take once we're done.
You could have been on painkillers before we started recording. You chose not to.
Yep.
You're just the worst.
I know, right?
Well, it wasn't hurting then. Then I was talking, and then it did.
You should have thought ahead and, like, you know, thought of us. Like, put us before you, Ken.
Just wait until I try to be on when I have my teeth pulled. That probably won't happen if that happens on a Monday.
Okay, schedule your dental work around recording the show.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. It won't be a problem.
Yeah. It's not
remember,
like
remember, we come first in all things, Ken. Fuck your teeth.
Something's
when
about
we fuck
to...
your teeth, we come first.
Something's about to fuck
yes!
With a drill.
Intro quote.
Oh, God.